20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. As I tell you every single day, 365 days a year, as always, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate that a ton. We've got a really fun breakdown today as we are going to go over Anthony Belton, second round pick, and what he can bring to the Packers in 2025 and beyond. Really excited to kind of go through all the things that I learned about Anthony Belton today, watching lots and lots and lots of Anthony Belton tape, even going back to his redshirt freshman year where he got a handful of games, or a couple games. But lots to go over today. We're going to get there. Before we get there, shout out to a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member, Landon Johnson. Landon, thanks so much for signing up. Make sure to check out those memberships. And hey, if you're liking the show, maybe you're new from draft season, whatever it might be, make sure to tell a friend about it. Give those 5-star reviews, like, comment. And of course, the easiest, best way to do, you know, support the channel, just hit that subscribe button. And if you're on an audio podcast, make sure you're getting the automatic download so that it's downloading every single day. And like I said, if you're not subscribed yet, make sure to do so. That helps us a ton here at the Pack-A-Day Podcast. All right. Take a deep breath here. We got a little bit of news on Tuesday about one Jaire Alexander. A report of sorts from Rob Domofsky happened to post on Twitter a little bit of an update on our good friend Jaire Alexander. Now, there's a lot of rumors being spread out there that I'd said something to the extent of there was a 0.01% chance that Jaire Alexander would be back in Green Bay. That's all fake news. It's not real. It's amazing what AI can generate these days. Here was the quote from Rob Domofsky, the tweet from Rob Domofsky. Quote, according to a source, the Packers and Jaire Alexander continue to talk about a possible resolution, which could include a reconciliation to where Alexander plays for the Packers in 2025. After all options are still on the table: release, trade, or return. Like an RKO out of nowhere. A lot of you are saying, hey, Andy, I think this is a better chance than you're giving it credit for. Here's where I'm at right now. Clearly, there is more nuance to this than I had expected. I will gladly take the L on that one. What I will say is, if you were to ask me still, and I'm not trying to just dig in my heels and be naive or anything like that, or just stubborn to the situation, I still believe that there is a better than 50-50 chance. And I don't even want to go over percentages anymore for obvious reasons. I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that he is still not back in Green Bay. I still think that there is some issue there that has been taking place this entire time. And I'm still sort of in the, I'll believe it when I see it, if he's actually back with the team this year. But it clearly seems to be a little bit different with this information from Rob Domofsky than what we viewed it as, or I should say what I viewed it as more recently. Couple things here. I think there's three ways to interpret this. Three things that could have potentially happened where we're at this point right now. Number one would be the cynical side of this. Green Bay has been trying this entire offseason to trade Jaire Alexander. That has been reported by numerous people, okay? There's even reports that one team made an offer and it just did not come to fruition because Jaire Alexander was not willing to change his contract in any way. They've been trying to trade him. If Green Bay has reached a point where they still want to trade him, but they are not wanting him back on the team, and they know that if they can't trade him, they're going to have to release him. If that's to the point where they're at, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying if it is, this could be one more call to the rest of the NFL of saying, hey, look it over here. We're kumbayaing and we might get back together. And if you want to trade for him, you better be willing to pay that contract, or you better be willing to offer us a little bit more, whatever that thing is that is holding things up with teams not trading for him. Hey, we're just going to get back together and Jaire and the Packers are going to be, you know, working together in 2025. And that would be a signal to the rest of the league of like, hey, make us your trade offers. It would be your last gasp, basically. Like, could this generate that last opportunity to maybe get some offers in? And if so, you take the offer. And if not, then you bite the bullet and finally say, we're moving on, we're releasing him. That is the cynical way of looking at it that again, there's, you leak out that you're thinking of reconciling, so you get some of those trade offers back in. Or maybe somebody ups the ante a little bit, say, no, we want them actually. We'll give you a little bit more. That's one way. Number two is that Jair Alexander just kind of continued to go about this offseason like nothing was wrong, like nothing ever happened. And you know, for example, welcoming Nate Hobbs to the Packers, working out with Xavier McKinney, showing up to the virtual program, like all of it, he just kind of did his thing, just kind of kept being a Packer. And maybe the Packers were like, huh, okay, well, let's see how this goes. Let's see if maybe, you know, he's healthy, he's engaged, and let's just play this thing out. And maybe there is like a reconciliation moment of, hey, how can we make this work? And let's bring Jair Alexander back. He's been great. Maybe again, there's a galvanizing moment here between the Packers and Jair Alexander. And then last but not least, I think the most likely scenario here, and I've talked about this in the past. I talked about it on, I did a whole show on basically the case for keeping Jair Alexander. The most likely scenario is that both sides recognize that there's not a better option out there for either of them than each other. They might both recognize that, hey, a divorce would be great here. It's time for both parties to move on. But Jair and his agent could look at it and say, yeah, we kind of want to move on, but you know, based on what we're kind of, you know, canvassing the league and not getting any of this trade offers and no team willing to take on your contract, your way to make the most money this year is probably in Green Bay. If you want to get, you know, as much money as you can, it could very well be right here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, playing for the Packers. And for the Packers, they could clearly at this point say, okay, so like we signed Nate Hobbs, great, but we were expecting to maybe bring back a Corey Ballantyne or a Robert Rochelle, or we were expecting to, you know, grab a couple corners in the draft, maybe early, maybe day one, day two. And none of that happened. And Corey Ballantyne's gone. Robert Rochelle is gone. Eric Stokes is gone. And in is Nate Hobbs. But then if Jair Alexander's gone as well, you've lost four, you've brought in one, and then, you know, a seventh round draft pick. That's all you've done. It's not nothing, but it leaves you certainly wanting a little bit more. And with Jair, you get potentially, the $1 million question is, can he stay healthy? But potentially a lot of bit more, something that really adds to your defense. If you want to make this defense the best it can possibly be, a healthy Jair Alexander would go a long way in doing that. Make no mistake, he is the best cover corner on this team. Some issues in tackling, not the shutdown guy he once was. See the Philadelphia Eagles game from week one last year, but still a very good cover corner that would help in a variety of different ways and give Jeff Hafley another useful weapon on that defense to use in a variety of different ways, meaning you can motion him around if you want, you put him in the slot, put him outside. If you wanted to do a little bit more man-to-man coverage, if you had a team that had, you know, one primary wide receiver, you can use Jair a little bit more on that. Like there's a lot that you can potentially do there that they don't, again, they don't have that flavor of corner on the team right now. That would be a nice addition if you could bring him back and if he stays healthy. So Jair recognizes and his agent recognizes, hey, our best way to make the most money is in Green Bay. And if you're Green Bay, you realize, hey, we could really use Jair based on the state of our depth chart at corner. And there's nobody else out there to get at this point. And if you can kind of find a way to come to that conclusion, all right, then maybe you can work out a compromise. And I floated this out there. I've talked about this actually in the past, but something around a $10 million. So right now he's set to make $17.5 million this year. Okay, $17.5 million base salary plus incentives. If you're looking at the contract out there, so many people have this so wrong. I still get questions on it. Don't worry about the signing bonus or the dead cap hit or anything like that. Okay. Nuke it, get rid of it, get it out of your mind. Green Bay has two 1-year team options for Jair Alexander. If they keep him this year, he will make $17.5 million this year. Okay. And that will count against the salary cap and they will pay him $17.5 million in cold hard cash. That's the situation. If they keep him next year, they have a team option as well. They can cut him and save all the money that they need to on the base salary and whatnot, or they can keep him for a 1-year, $19.5 million deal. It amounts to 2 1-year team options. And this year's team option happens to be $17.5 million. If you could find a way to negotiate that differently, and the way that I would look at it is say, let's take that $17.5 million and bring it down to $10 million. Okay. Let's bring it down to $10 million. And here in exchange for that, Jair Alexander, we're going to give you three things. And this is what's going to make the compromise worth it for you. On our end, we take 17 mil and we cut it down to 10 mil. All right, we're cool with that. In exchange, we're going to guarantee the $10 million. So right now it's not guaranteed. We're going to guarantee it right here and now. Bonus for Jair. Number two, we are going to give you a $500,000 per game roster bonus. Every time that you are active for a game, you get $500,000, which if you do some quick back of the napkin math, you quickly get to the fact that he could make $18.5 million if he were to play the full season. He could actually make more money in that deal than if he would stay on the current one that he's on right now. And it really makes sense for both sides, where if Green Bay, like if he plays his normal eight games, all right, you're going to pay him $14 million, which $14 million for eight games is certainly better than $17.5 million for eight games. It's a little bit closer to maybe what you'd be okay with. And if he somehow injures something and doesn't play this season, you're only $10 million on the hook rather than $17.5 million on the hook. Gives Green Bay a little bit of insurance in that situation. If you're Jair, you're probably not getting a deal as good. I know you're not getting a deal as good as this on the open market. You're getting a 10 mil guaranteed deal 1 year plus 8.5 million in incentives if you just play. This is a fair deal. And I could even make more money than what I was set to make in the first place. Okay, I'm cool with that. But it's not done there. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to void the final year of the deal, which means that if you go out and have a really good year this year, you can go out and get a massive free agent contract next year in free agency. You'll be an unrestricted free agent. And we won't work through this divorce again next year where you're trapped with, you know, our contract and, you know, you want to get out and we're ready to move on and we have to work through this all again. We're going to void next year's contract. That would seem to make sense for all sides involved. Jair at age 29 would have the opportunity to hit the open market. And if you're Green Bay, you're thinking like, actually, if we're going to do incentives, you know, we're going to want like Pro Bowl incentives or interception incentives. The incentive that you're giving him is A, he needs to be active on game day. If he's not showing up, doing the work, whatever, Green Bay doesn't have to activate him. They can deactivate him on game days, meaning that you shut him down, you don't pay him $500K. So if he's not given everything he's got, you don't have to activate him. The second thing, which I don't think is going to come to fruition, but it's a lever that you have to pull. The second thing is that because of the free agency year, now Jair has every motivation in the world to go out and have his best season that he has ever had. If he goes out and stays healthy and can play every game, he earns $8.5 million extra dollars. And in this case, gets $18.5 million for the season. And then the second thing is that you have the ability to go and hit free agency next year. So to me, that makes sense for both sides. There's advantages for Green Bay. There's advantages for Jair. Are there disadvantages on both sides? Yes, but that is what compromise is about. You sometimes have to, you know, give a little to take a little. And that is what I think this situation ultimately becomes. And if they can work something out, like I've said from the very beginning, this is not me this entire time being anti-Jair. This is me trying to read the tea leaves between everything that's been happening. And if Jair comes back, you can clearly see why that would potentially help the secondary if he can stay healthy. And I will just be cheering that he stays healthy. That's all it would be in this situation. And there's no reason to think that he can't still play football at a high level if he can actually stay healthy. All right, so sorry, I didn't mean to go on so long about Jair Alexander, but this is obviously one of the biggest things that's going on with the Packers right now. In fact, you can argue there's not much bigger that is going to happen the remainder of this offseason than the conclusion of the Jair Alexander saga one way or the other. He plays, he doesn't play, who knows? But that's probably the biggest thing that's going to happen the remainder of this offseason. I don't know if I want to knock on wood because if something bigger happened, what did they trade for Trey Hendrickson or did something catastrophic happen? I don't even know. I don't want to tempt the football gods, but let's just say that that's probably going to be the biggest thing the remainder of this offseason. All right, with that, let's get to Anthony Belton. I didn't mean to delay it this long. My apologies for that, but we have a great breakdown for you with Anthony Belton today. So let's get into it right away. 6'6", 336 pounds. This is a monster of a man. He, as Dane Brugler put, blocks out the sun. I love that in his scouting report from Dane Brugler. He is a huge human being. Obviously an offensive lineman out of NC State, had 2 years at Georgia Military College, then had a redshirt season at NC State, and then played for three full years at NC State. He is technically a sixth-year senior, and he just turned 24 in February. From a sort of height, weight, arm length, wingspan sort of standpoint, At guard, this is per mock draftable, he has 75th percentile arm length, 73rd percentile hand size, 95th percentile wingspan, 92nd percentile height, and 94th percentile weight. So as a guard, this is a huge dude. As a tackle, he only has 37th percentile arm length, 66th percentile hand size, 72nd percentile wingspan, 61st percentile height, and 92nd percentile weight. So it depends what he plays, but either way, just know this is a very big human being. From an athletic standpoint, as a tackle, he's a 7.75 relative athletic score, had 35th percentile on the bench press, but 75th percentile vertical, 74th percentile broad jump, 58th percentile 40-yard dash with a 62nd percentile 10-yard split, 75th percentile in the short shuttle, and 65th percentile in the three cone. Tested above average in everything besides the bench press. And then as a guard, he's an 8.76 relative athletic score, 28th percentile on the bench, but then 86th percentile vert, 86th percentile broad jump, 67th percentile in the 40, 66th percentile in the 10-yard split, 78th percentile in the short shuttle, and 73rd percentile with the three cone. So a very athletic player, specifically at guard, but certainly at tackle as well. His athletic comps per RAS, Michael Jordan, not that Michael Jordan. If you remember Michael Jordan, the guard that was actually in Green Bay as a practice squad member a couple years ago, I want to say now, that was an athletic comp, as well as Byron Bell, the former Packer. That did not work out very well for Green Bay. Hopefully this works out better. And then Wyatt Millam, who was a tackle guard in this draft class as well, who went a little bit later in this draft. From a mock draftable standpoint, the two closest comparisons that they had were Evan Neal, the Giants offensive tackle, and then Landon Dickerson, the Eagles' really good interior offensive lineman. So some interesting comps there, some not so great ones from RAS, some really fun ones from mock draftable. And again, just because you're the same level of athlete does not mean that you're the same football player, right? There's a lot more that goes into it than just the athletic profile, but just some interesting athletic comparisons there. All right, let's get into PFF's grades. In 2022, he had a 67.7 grade, an 81.2 pass block grade, and a 56.4 run block grade. In 2023, he moved up to a 68.6 overall grade with a 71.5 pass block grade and a 63.6 run block grade. And in 2024, this past season, a 69.1 overall grade with an 81.3 pass block grade and a 65.6 run block grade. One thing you should notice there is what? The run block grades were mostly fine, but it was actually the pass block grades that were much better than the run block grades. So keep that in mind as we kind of move forward. In 2022, he had 370 pass pro snaps, allowed 12 pressures, a 92.4 pass block efficiency, and a 3.2% pressure rate. That's a pretty low pressure rate overall. In 2023, 489 pass pro snaps, 23 pressures, 97.2 pass block efficiency with a 4.7% pressure rate. And then this past season, 2024, 476 pass pro snaps, 14 pressures, 98.1 pass block efficiency with a 2.9% pressure percentage, very good pressure percentage this past year. In totality in college, 1,338 pass pro snaps, allowed only 8 sacks in 3 seasons as a starting left tackle, 3 hits, 38 hurries, and 49 total pressures for a 3.7% pressure percentage. Some miscellaneous notes on our friend Anthony Belton here. He was not a 5-star recruit, not a 4-star recruit, not a 3-star recruit, not a 2-star recruit, not even a 1-star recruit. He was a 0-star recruit. Didn't get a single star. This was not somebody that was initially very well thought of. You know, went to the small community college, worked his way up, and now was a second round pick in the NFL draft, which is quite the journey for Anthony Belton. The great news is he has no known injury issues. His nickname is Escalade, which is phenomenal. That is a A1 10.0 relative name score, like that nickname score, I should say. Like, what more could you possibly want? Escalade for an offensive lineman that's 336 pounds. Oh yeah. That's if you're going on vibes here, right? The number 22, maybe, and I've seen some people say, you know, the vibes aren't great for number 22 for Matthew Golden. The nickname Escalade has to be immaculate vibes. So if we're just going off of vibes, maybe you don't end up with the first round pick that you want, but the second round pick should be a Hall of Famer. Let's just put it that way. And then his weight at one point, as Dane Brugler noted, did balloon to 360 pounds this past year. So that's something that you have to keep an eye on. You probably don't want him at 360. Probably want him closer to that 330, maybe low 340s would probably be okay as well. But, you know, 338 to 342, somewhere in that range is probably where you want him. Certainly not up at 360. And then he was a Senior Bowl attendee as well. And we'll talk about that more in just a moment. Let's get into his strengths. There's some really, really fun stuff here and some stuff I think you're really going to like. He has big, strong hands. When he gets those mitts on you, assuming he, you know, gets his hands correctly in the right spot, we'll talk about that, but he can really control you. He's got great grip strength and he can just throw and maul people around. He's just a real, he's a bear. He's a dancing bear is exactly what he is. He's got these big physical hands and he is not afraid to use them. He has a fantastic demeanor out on the field. We have been talking, I have been talking about wanting a little bit more nasty out on the field. When we talk RAS, it's relative athletic score. I want a little bit more relative a-hole score. He's got it. He plays with some nasty. He wants to finish you. They counted pancakes in his school, and he consistently led his team in pancakes. He would maul people. You know, if you jump up, he's going to punish you. If he can have the opportunity to, you know, look for work and somebody's rushing and he doesn't have anything to do, he's going to blindside you and wipe you out. He had a play. This is true. He had a play. They're engaged. It's an edge rusher coming off the edge. He's coming as the quarterback's behind him and he's working with him and he's engaged with the blocker and he just lifts his hand up, full karate chop, bam, with a billion miles of force on this poor defensive end. And he reacts and then he just throws him to the ground. It was awesome. It was freaking awesome. Like, that is the kind of guy that he is. And you can just see, especially in 2024, like, watch him. There are so many pancakes, guys thrown around. He's going to bring that to the table. You're going to love his demeanor. Plays through the whistle. Did get kicked out of a game for spitting on someone. Relative a-hole score. You got one. We got one, guys. He is definitely within that realm, to say the least. Also, like, not just that, but, like, fun demeanor as well. Like, there's a play I posted on Twitter where his running back is, you know, breaking a touchdown and he's just dancing behind the line and going nuts. And like, he's very, very fun to watch in so many different ways. He looks for work, as I just kind of talked about there a second ago. He's got incredible size, as we've talked about. He tested well in everything besides the bench press. He absolutely can be an impact blocker. And that matters. Okay. Like, we've talked about some of the issues in red zone offense for Green Bay. And then some short yardage situations or just the ability to run block on the interior when you're starting to go against guys like Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter. It gets really hard in there. You better have some guys that can match the physicality. And hello, welcome Aaron Banks. And then when you spend another second round pick on Anthony Belton, like, they're getting some size to bulk up and go against some of these teams that have very physical interior defensive lines. And that has the ability to be, I think, really, really fun for this offense and more specifically, Josh Jacobs. All right, he can easily reach the second level. He times his snap count very well. I slowed this down on a couple different occasions because this is not who's the Kansas City Chief, Juwan Taylor. It's not Juwan Taylor who's getting like a 40-second head start into his stance. This is literally like timed up to perfection. Just as the ball starts to move, he is getting out of his stance immediately. He's quick out of his stance, especially for 330, 340, whatever he's playing at. He's very quick out of his stance and can get to his spot really, really, really quick. So that is a huge aspect for him, but he times that snap count and gets out of his stance very, very quick. As mentioned, he can easily reach the second level. Rare movement skills for his size. When you talk about 330, 340, 350, whatever he's playing at, you just don't see guys move like this. And we'll talk about this in kind of the positional value sort of thing in a little bit, but man, when you have the opportunity, and it's kind of the same at nose tackle, we talked about it with Kenneth Grant, if you have the opportunity to take him, of like, you don't get a lot of opportunities to draft players that have this sort of size and strength and mentality, like, or sorry, and agility as well. Like, you, there's not many, and you can pass on them because they have some deficiencies. And it's going to take some time maybe to kind of get them playing the way that you want. But if you can get them to work, man, is it a huge valuable resource. Because again, there's just so few people, humans made, that have the ability to move at 340 pounds the way that Anthony Belton moves. If you can find somebody like that, again, it can pay huge dividends if you can get them playing at a really solid level. All right, so he's got great movement skills for his size. He engulfs smaller players. I mean, we talked about he can get to the second level, but if he gets a 220-pound linebacker on the second level and he gets engaged, good night. It's game over. If he gets like a Pete Warner, one of those guys in the second level, he's just going to maul that dude. It's not going to be pretty. So he has the ability to get out to that second level and then just start picking fights. He's just going to go out there and really lay it on people. And that's really, again, very fun thing to watch. He's got a really good push-pull technique. So, you know, kind of push and then rip him down. He gets away. It's a good play, but he'll do that from time to time. I talked about the chop that he did. He has overall great pass block efficiency. Like, I want to point this out. His overall pass block ability and what he showed in college through three seasons as a left tackle at NC State, he has really good pass pro ability. There are technique things that we're going to talk about that he really needs to work on, but it is hard to get around this guy. And his baseline for like what's an average play for him is really, really good because he's got athleticism, strength, and he's a massive human. So you're trying to get around him, and it's just like you're spending so much time exerting just trying to get around him. And he has long arms too, which plays in his favor. Like, there's a lot going on here for Anthony Belton that makes him very difficult to get through or get around. So his baseline has been a very, very good pass protector since the day that he started playing for NC State, which is impressive. I thought he really looked the part in the Senior Bowl practices. You go and watch some of the Senior Bowl practice tape, and the game tape's good too, but the practice tape, you know, he's going against draft pick after draft pick after draft pick after draft pick and just completely shutting them down, like not giving them anything. That was maybe one of the most impressive of you get to the Senior Bowl and you're going against guys that are going to be first, second, third, fourth, fifth round picks. And let's see what you got. You maybe played against some smaller school kids or got some advantageous matchups. Now, what does it look like when you go against other guys that are going to get drafted? And Belton was fantastic. He just, again, rep after rep after rep was just like, you're not getting through me. And he was right. You weren't. It was really, really impressive. Just raw natural ability. Again, you can't coach this. He just has it. It's innate. It's in him. He is huge. He moves very well and he's very strong and he plays very pissed off. That's a good combination of things to have. When you have that raw natural ability, it's going to get you a lot of chances in the league and it's going to give you a chance to succeed almost no matter what. Obviously, of course, when you get to the NFL, everyone's kind of got that raw natural ability, but you definitely see it in him and it definitely comes out when you're watching him on tape. When his technique is good, his anchor is almost impossible to get through. So if he gets low, bends at the knees, anchors down, good luck. Absolutely good luck. You're just not moving him. You might as well just be a tree planted right there because you're not uprooting him in any way. So when he plays with good technique, nearly impossible to get through him. Has 32 career starts at left tackle in college, had an 87.3 pass blocking grade from PFF in 2024, which was fifth best among all offensive tackles for PFF this past year. And he projects as a player that has four position versatility. And we know how much Green Bay values versatility. Left tackle, left guard, right tackle, has the ability theoretically to play all four of those. And I don't think that's just theoretical. I think he will have the ability to play all four spots. That is the strengths for Anthony Belton. Let's get into the weaknesses. Number one, and these are not in any real particular order from strongest, biggest weakness to lowest weakness or anything like that. But number one, gets caught lunging, bending, and getting off balance. And then number two is balance and just on the ground too often. I did think he improved this past year. I thought it was worse, you know, earlier in his career. But there are far too many times where he is lunging forward, not letting the game come to him, bending at the waist, which is it's one of my biggest faux pas when I watch offensive line. You just really don't want to see them bend at the waist. So for just a quick lesson here, right? You're bending at the waist. Your eyes are going down. Your head's going down. You're off balance. You're not centered. You don't have a good center of gravity. Everything is messed up. Everything. And it's such a natural thing to do. You're either going to lunge across and you're going to start bending at the waist, or you're going to try to reach them and you're bending at the waist. It's such an easy thing to do. And just think of David Bakhtiari, right? If you want to know the opposite of just staying low in your stance, moving your feet, mirroring, and never having to bend at the waist because you're always under control and you're always basically dictating terms. You're not lunging or reaching or trying to get them and bending over at the waist. You are calm, low in your stance, great footwork, great hands, and on balance. So that's what he needs to continue to improve. Not David Bakhtiari, Anthony Belton in this situation needs to make sure that he is not lunging forward, not getting off balance, not bending at the waist. Those are things that will get you beat very quickly in the NFL. So he's going to have to work on his balance. He's going to have to work on his technique and make sure that that is not something that continues at the NFL level. Yes, he can be a big time impact blocker, but it's not quite as consistent as you would maybe like. Meaning you'll see the pancakes, you'll see the big plays, but there's also times where it kind of, I don't want to say disappears maybe, but you don't see it as prevalent. And I would like to see him just be that physical, intimidating presence with a level of consistency that maybe I didn't quite see at times, especially this past season. His hand placement is all over the place. This is something that has to get cleaned up. You know, where you want it is in the chest, or you want it inside. You can grab the jersey inside and control that a little bit better. As soon as you get outside, you're going to get those holding penalties. Now your hands are outside, so what can they do? You get their hands inside on you, and now it's going to be a problem that way. There's so much that can go wrong. So his hand placement really, really needs to improve. And the crazy thing is, again, it's not been good and he's still been successful. If he gets that down, especially with his big hands like we talked about, he is going to be a massive, literally and figuratively, problem for opposing defensive ends. Opposing defensive ends. Twists and stunts give him a lot of problems. And I don't want to put it just on him, because it takes your counterpart to work along with you. It takes good communication. There's so much stuff that can go wrong at the college level, especially on some of those twists and stunts. But in general, he and his tag team partner, whoever it was, over the course of the last 3 years, did not do a great job of managing those twists and stunts. So I don't know if that's a communication thing. I don't know if that's something that the coaches just needed to do a better job with. I'm not sure if that was, you know, Belton completely messing things up, but it did not look pretty when they had twists and stunts going against him. Footwork is very far away from teaching tape. It's going to have to continue to improve. And like just some weird off balance stuff where like he'll jab aggressively outside and then jab aggressively inside. And he's just like, his body's all over the place. He's got 340 pounds of just, you know, humanity bouncing all over. Just want to see him play a little bit more under control. Thought his reaction time and anticipation were not great, meaning it's almost like he was playing in somewhat level of like a, almost like cruise control. And, or just expecting one thing to happen. And if he got that thing to happen, he was in a good spot. But if he got something different, it would be difficult for him to kind of adjust in real time and make those, you know, sort of improvisational adjustments that you need. And that can be a problem because you're not going to get the same thing over and over. You might get a twist or a stunt. You might get a spin move. You might get a jab step or a euro step. They might try to speed rush you and bend around the edge. So you have to be able to know that so many different things are coming, and you have to be able to improvise a little bit. You have to anticipate what might be coming, and you got to stay on balance. Otherwise, you are in no man's land, and there are just too many times this past year and really throughout his career that he was just a little bit, again, off balance and not exactly knowing what to expect, or when he didn't, not anticipating and or, again, having the improvisational ability to kind of course correct in real time. Of course, he's 24 years old as well. If he were 21, 22, this would have a lot more like kind of upside, but he's 24. It's not to say that he's a finished product or that he needs to come in and, you know, start right now, but, you know, there's a little bit less progression that you should expect from him because he is already 24 years old. He's also had 8 penalties per season over the last 3 seasons, so needs to clean up those penalties. And I would last but not least just not exactly call him fluid. There are times where he looks really impressive as an athlete, but there's, again, just sort of some weird nuance slash technique stuff slash movement. Like it's just, it's not the most fluid thing in the world, which at 340, it's not always going to be. He's an unbelievable athlete. But again, I wouldn't necessarily call it fluid at guard tackle, whatever he ends up playing. My key notes here is that this is the ultimate, not the ultimate, there's probably better examples in totality, but this is a really strong classic example of traits versus technique. When I look at what he can bring to the table, what Anthony Belton could be in this league, and remember, what you're trying to do from a scouting standpoint is not grade what they did. There's a very different mindset that I have to go about when I'm grading tape in season for the Packers that are on the team and grading if they did good or bad. There's a very different grade in process for that than when I'm watching film for a prospect. I don't care how they did on a specific play. Now, if they keep making the same mistake over and over, well, then yes, that's noteworthy. But a mistake here or there, that's going to happen. How do they respond to the mistake? But more importantly, again, what are the technique issues, not technique issues, what are there any skill sets or traits that limit them from being able to make that play? And if not, no, then it's just something that the coaches can work on. When I look at him as to what he can potentially do here, I think he has everything that you need to be an extremely successful offensive lineman in this league. He's got unbelievable height, weight, and strength, like big time physicality. He's got great movement skills for his size. I mean, really, really impressive movement skills. Get to the second level, pull out wide. There's a play where he pulls out from tackle and gets out on a little, I think it was a reverse, and he completely mauls the corner. Like, he's got all of it. The athleticism, and then the big thing is the demeanor as well. So he's got, he wants to finish people. He wants to be that physical dominating offensive lineman. He's got all the traits necessary, and the things that he struggled with are all very, very teachable. All things that a offensive line coach can work on with him. Would I like it at age 24 to be a little bit more advanced at this point? Yes, but this is a very common debate of what is he now? Probably in the NFL, not quite good enough because the technique needs a lot of work. But he's got everything that you can't teach. And that is a very important thing to have. And that's what you're hoping that your offensive line, you know, coach can come in and do, is teach him all the things that he doesn't have right now and integrate those things into his game, or make the things that he can do but isn't doing them consistently enough, make them a little bit more consistent. So that's what, you know, this is the classic traits versus technique. You can hopefully teach him up. And if so, you've got a really great player on your hands. Also, Zach Cruz tweeted this out. Only 22 offensive tackles played 400 plus snaps and allowed 12 or fewer pressures this past year. Green Bay has two of those 22 that they took in this draft, both John Williams and Anthony Belton. Three of the other ones were first round picks, Membu, Banks, and Connerly, all who went in the first round of the draft. So 400 plus snaps, 12 or fewer pressures, John Williams and Anthony Belton in good company on that list. What can Belton bring to Green Bay in 2025? Certainly some really good depth. I think some competition, potentially either at right guard or left tackle. We'll see. I think it's going to be right guard. Versatility, four position versatility, a lot more strength. Could we get a, if you don't know, Kevin Berry was a offensive lineman that came in as a sixth offensive lineman. And they called that the U-Bacon formation. I don't know why it was U-Bacon, probably because Kevin Berry liked bacon or something, but they called that the U-Bacon formation, sixth offensive lineman. Could we see a U-Belton formation? I would love it. Bring him in as that, you know, sort of Mercedes Lewis, but, you know, 100 pounds heavier and not quite 100, but you get my point, and go out and move some people. I think that could be very, very fun. But there's some ways that you could potentially get him on the field, whether it's via short yardage or whatever you want to do, that could be fun because of his run blocking ability and his ability to overpower people. Again, some strength, and then just a different flavor of offensive lineman than they have. You know, he's going to be a bit more physical, a bit bigger. They don't have this kind of guy on the roster. Now they do. And it's going to give Jeff Hafley a little bit something different along that offensive line. Why I'm optimistic: natural ability plus traits plus demeanor plus Green Bay's ability to develop offensive linemen. That is a great space to be in. He's got all the raw talent, all the traits you look for, puts in the effort, has an unbelievable demeanor, and Green Bay knows how to train these guys up. It's their one of their true organizational superpowers for decades now, is drafting and developing offensive linemen. Belton could probably not go to many better places than where he's going in Green Bay. Again, I will say the Senior Bowl practices and what he did against some of the top talent at the Senior Bowl is another reason I'm optimistic. And then again, everything is teachable. Everything that is potentially wrong with his game right now is a teachable thing that he can get better at. And that is very, very exciting. Why I'm concerned? Well, the technique needs a lot of work and he's 24 years old already. That to me is some level of concerning. I get when, you know, people are saying that this is more of a third round grade or whatever, like I can get it. I think he deserved to go second round. Don't get me wrong, but I could see a little bit more of like a third round grade. It's not the huge difference. It's not the be all end all of like, oh my goodness, they reached by 30 picks or something. He would have been gone in round two. I really feel that way. And if not very early round three, I don't think there was any chance he was getting to Green Bay later in the draft. But how I would kind of view this is I think he was worth being a second round pick. I'm not sure that if I were Green Bay, I would have been the one to be like, we'll use the second round pick on him. I would have maybe let somebody else do it. But here's the thing, and I kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. If you do not ever, it's never usually the sexiest pick, right? Anthony Belton. When Anthony Belton's called, you're not exactly getting those like, oh my God, they got Anthony Belton. It just feels like, ah, okay, whatever. You know, eat your vegetables sort of pick. If you don't take those, if you take Trey Amos, right? It's so easy where you just never get those kind of guys. Because you got to take it. Look at Kenneth Grant. I'm sure a lot of Dolphins fans at, you know, that early in the draft are like, we took Kenneth Grant that early. If you don't take him, you're not going to get him. You when you have the chance, you better strike, because guys like this that move this well at this size are not along very often. And when you get the opportunity to take one, it's usually a pretty good opportunity and you have to take it. And if not, you're not going to find them later in the draft. So I thought this was understandable for Green Bay, why they would take him in the second round. Final thoughts here as we kind of wrap this up. One of the things you need to remember with Belton, and you can kind of make this like, I wish they would have went with Trey Amos, right? Trey Amos is a really good football player. I like Trey Amos quite a bit. If you would have told me that they took Trey Amos in the first round, I wouldn't have had any real major, not with Matthew Golden there, that I would have had an issue there. But like going into the draft, at 24 would have been rich. But if you like moved down to the end of the first and took Trey Amos, I'd be like, yeah, I have no problem with that. You can go do that. That's cool. But when you look at positional value, right? Let's say Belton stays at left tackle. Dan Moore, a average-ish offensive tackle, just signed a 4-year, $82 million deal. Almost $21 million per year for a very average-ish offensive tackle. Nothing to write home about. If you told me this year that Anthony Belton ended up playing a bunch of starts at left tackle because of, you know, just needing the depth or whatever, and you told me that Belton outperformed Dan Moore this year, I would not be surprised at all. I think that could legitimately happen. And Dan Moore just got a 4-year, $82 million deal. So that's the one way of looking at it. It's a positive way of looking at it. And if you look at Amos, right? If Amos becomes really, really good, like a really good corner, well, the really good corners in this draft, guys like Byron Murphy went for less than Dan Moore did. Went for less than Dan Moore. So a average at best offensive tackle goes for more than a really good corner. So just remember that when you're looking at positional value. Now, on the negative side of this, and another way of looking at this is Mekhi Becton is 26 years old. He's 2 years older at this point, you know, than Anthony Belton. 2 years older than Anthony Belton. He went for 2 years, $20 million. Not exactly this huge, exorbitant contract. And I think there is an argument to be made of, hey, could we have just maybe picked Mekhi Becton up for 2 years, $20 million? Green Bay had the salary cap space. Maybe it's not the ideal situation, but you're basically buying a second round pick in that scenario. You get 2 years of, you know, Becton, somebody that just started along the Super Bowl that's even bigger than what Belton is. By the way, it's just one letter away, Becton to Belton, just a C to an L. Could you just done that? Could you just brought him in 2 years, $20 million, and then still had a second round pick and still get this mauling physical right guard that actually just played it in the Super Bowl? I think if I were Green Bay, and some of this is the benefit of hindsight, I think I might have just gone in that direction. Sign Becton, let him be that big mauler for a couple seasons. And meanwhile, you gain a second round pick out of it. It's not apples to apples. It's not perfect, but it just, again, these are all the things that everything's a transaction. Everything's that you're trading off something for something else. And in given that opportunity, I think I might take Mekhi Becton and a second round pick over $10 million in salary cap space and, you know, Anthony Belton, but to each their own. It's not, again, it's not some egregious decision here. I've talked about, I think Green Bay needed more physicality. They needed a little bit more relative a-hole score. And I think they got it here with Anthony Belton. He plays like somebody pissed in his Cheerios and he ate them and he's not happy about it. That's how he plays. And that's exactly how I want my offensive lineman to play. I really enjoy the way that he plays overall. And I think you're really going to enjoy the way that he plays as well. Does he need to clean some things up? Absolutely. But his demeanor is fantastic. And I love the way that he goes about playing with an attacking physical mentality. I think he can really develop into a solid starter. I really do. I don't think this is a crazy reach. I do think there's some risk reward here. I think the reward is that you get a really solid starting guard or maybe even tackle. And the risk is that he's just never really quite puts it together at age 24. The technique isn't there and it doesn't work in Green Bay. There's risk reward with every draft pick, but I feel like he's a little bit more variance than maybe most of them are. He is clearly, to me, one of the players I'm most excited to see in person and watch as he develops as a Green Bay Packer. I am excited that they took him. I probably would have maybe gone in a different direction, but I have no problem with the pick. I have zero problem with the pick whatsoever. And like I said, I'm very excited to watch him play. If it were me, I would move him to right guard and I would rebuild him from the ground up. You're going to be a guard now. You're moving from the left to the right, and we're going to build you from scratch. Forget everything you know technical wise. We're going to start over and we're going to build the basics. And hopefully by next year, he'd be ready to go as a really, really good starting right guard when potentially Sean Ryan leaves in free agency. Friends, that's going to do it for me today. Hope you enjoyed this breakdown of Anthony Belton, plus me getting to eat some crow potentially on Jaire Alexander. I'll take the hit rate, the hit miss rate. And I'll always say this. I'm always happy to email Nagler. I posted the, kind of the joke of being wrong about the 0.01% thing. And he's like, this reminds me of the time where you hated the Rashawn Gary pick. And I'm like, no. No, that's nothing. If you want the most, if Jaire does come back, the thing that's most relevant in this situation was a tweet that I posted in January of 2024. I said something to the ilk of, put it in writing or put it in ink, get the tattoo, write it in blood, carve it in your whatever. Aaron Jones will be a Packer in 2024. Mark it down. No questions asked. Aaron Jones, Green Bay Packer. And I don't know if you remember this, but he was a Minnesota Viking in 2024. So, hey, guess what? When you talk about the Packers 365 days a year, sometimes you're going to have a couple misses. I will always gladly admit to my misses. I will own up to them. I will learn from them, figure out what I can do to be better moving forward. And by the way, I don't even know that I missed yet. I still think that there's a better than 50% chance that he is not on the team this year. So I'm not even taking the full L yet. I might have to, but it certainly seems like it's better than 0.01%. So I'll take the L in that regard, but we'll see what ends up happening. But I always try to learn from it, learn from the mistakes and kind of move forward with that. So I can look at it in fun. I can look at the Rashawn Gary thing, the Aaron Jones thing. It will not be the first time I've made a mistake. It will, I promise you right now, and this is I can give you 100% guarantee it will not be the last time I make a mistake if it does in fact end up being a mistake. And that is A-okay. We learn from it. We get better. We move on. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Houle, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.